It's been a long time since we had our little Mondro catch up. So this is our fourth get together, even though it feels like we've had many more. And so what we're going to have a look at tonight is the conducive conditions, because we've kind of already, I'll go through what we've already covered, but we're kind of up to setting up for a retreat. You know, we've got used to the practice and the visualizations and things. And so, actually, the next time we get together will be a retreat day. And then there will be a little online mini retreat over Easter. So, I thought now's the time to get the conducive conditions section together. And also, because then in March, Geshe Sherab will be here with his teachings. And so then I'll be busy preparing all of those. I thought it's now or never moment. So the conducive conditions are about making things easier for ourselves, how to make sure we have everything set up so that we can really get in the flow, so that our practice is joyous. And so that we don't have obstacles, so we don't have our obstacles, outer, inner, or secret. And it's important to have good conditions and be able to practice because our time on this planet is limited and we don't know how long we'll last and we don't know how long the planet will last. So we've got to turbocharge our practice and we can by looking at these conditions. And we can. So by we can turbocharge our practice by retreat and pilgrimage, of which there's quite a few happening. Some of our members just came back from pilgrimage, but also doing a retreat has a very similar effect. And we can also safeguard our progress. And the way to safeguard our progress is by offering Tsog on the Tsog days and by doing protector prayers. And so then that way we don't leave ourselves open to interferences. So what we've covered, I mean, we're doing the Nondro refuge, and for many, many years, when people I'd ask questions and they'd go, "Oh, I just take refuge," and I always would wonder in the back of my mind, what does that mean? Like, what are they doing when they say, "I just take refuge"? What does that mean? Is it a feeling? Is it like a huge long list of things to do? Is it a prayer? Is it like, do you write a letter? Like, I don't know. And so, what I've really liked as we've gone through these various meditations is this slow rollout of just elements of the practice. And I think if I had got it all at once, I just never would have done it. I think this slow bit by bit has made it really doable and really enjoyable. So the last three sessions we've gone through a series of meditations. So the first class was the meditations on the four common nondros, which is kind of what drives us to taking refuge. So I've got spare handouts out there, but they were the meditations on like the limitations of samsara and death and impermanence.
Precious human life.
That's right, appreciating our precious human life and
Karmic cause and effect.
karmic cause and effect. So those four things in common with all the various scopes and various traditions and practices are the four things that turn our mind to the Dharma, to refuge. And so then the second class, so we had little meditations on each of those just to become familiar, to set the scene and our motivation. And then the second class was on the various causes and goals of going for refuge, the capabilities. So from worldly capability, lower scope, middle scope, higher scope, including Tantra. So has anyone got to any of those meditations yet? Oh, you got okay. Well, that's even past. That's up to the next one. Yeah, that's the third one. No, so this one was the one that had the chef's feast for the middle capable being, which was a bit of a hit, which is good. And also the GPS system meditation.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we've done those. Okay, so that was the Tantra one. So then the third class on The purification. So that was on the guru purification, what's purified and what blessings come. And then the three Buddha bodies, quite extensive Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya. And that's when I discovered that Geshe-la didn't specifically teach on Dharma or Sangha. And so I took that from the other handout. But so I've just got up to the Sangha one myself, and I've been really enjoying that. And it happened at the same time as hanging the chandeliers. And you know, so we're imagining this merit field. And so I've kind of imagined it's like the chandeliers are like all of the Sangha merit field, and I'm in amongst. That's so nice. And they're all like all the Sangha, they're shining so brightly that they're the light bulbs. And so instead of the merit field being over there, now suddenly, like I'm with them. And just, it's really wonderful. So, very nice bit of serendipity there. So, there might be a few of you that might have missed a class or two. And so, news of these meditations may be a surprise, but the handouts for them are all online. So that's the handouts 1, 2, and 3. And there are the accompanying Friday night sound files where there's lots of explanations and answers to your questions. The other thing that I managed to do, you know, the little booklet that from a teacher center. So I found that. Sourced it on Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archive, and I've also turned that into a PDF. So that's there up online as well. So I'm not as easy to carry around as the little booklet, but same information, and it's really good for the visualization. Yeah, I think I put it in both the Geshe Zopa teachings and the Ngondro one. So have there been any questions or comments? How you all tracking with the meditations with your mantra count. I did let some of you know I sent out an email that you know how Geshe Zopa was going to be coming back in September, and then it moved back to August, so now it's July.
Oh, really?
Yep. And I can actually give you the exact dates. So on July the 17th, which is a Thursday night, I've requested a special extra evening with Geshe Zopa where we can all offer our refuge Ngondro in person to Geshe-la. So he's going to be teaching the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but then I'm like, no, we need an extra day to be able to offer our Ngondros. So in person, we can write whatever it is that we've done, whatever amount that we've done in a card and actually offer it. And if you're online, then I figured out you can post a card and I can offer that to Geshe-la and we can have you up on the Zoom so that you can wave and he'll know that's you. So everyone will be able to get to offer.
Now, Miffy, can I ask if we don't get to the 100,000 before Geshe-la comes, is that a problem?
No, you just offer what you've got. You just offer what
Okay.
you have.
Yeah. Now, I'm probably preempting with this question. I'm going down to Bendigo for 4 days on the 20th with some friends. So, how am I going to do my practice while I'm away? Because I'm not sure what boundary I set in the
Oh
initial
yes.
thing. And
So when you go away, if you can take your cushion or some semblance of your cushion with you as a placeholder.
my brocade mat that I do my practice on every night,
Yeah,
because
something like that. So if you take the cushion or the mat that you do your practice on, and then you do the same schedule if you can, as you normally do. And if you can't do the same schedule, then you do the same process of prayers as you normally do. Then it's fine to travel and do that. I think Steve and Anne have told me that they just, because they're actually traveling all the time, they just have their Ngondro cushion, and wherever they put their cushion, that's their home. How's it going?
Can I ask another question? So
Yeah,
Francesca. when don't your mantras count, your prayers count? Like if I was flying in the plane and I sort of did the preliminary prayers and stuff like that, and then did mantra counting while I was in the plane, is that okay?
Yep, that's great. Yes. You can count them as long as you're counting them, you can count them.
Right.
And so Geshe-la said it's very good if you can do them in the same cushion, in the same session. But then if we're also out and about, as long as you've done them on the cushion in the session that day, then anything else that you do out and about and you're counting, you can add to your count. Yep, no
Right.
worries.
Thanks.
Just as well, because there's a lot of refuge mantras you can do whilst waiting in a queue. Liam.
My question follows on from Francesca's. But so if we don't complete the 100,000 by
July.
July, would it be like, do you just continue, like, would you, if you'd like to, would you like to continue on to do the 100? Because it's like
Yeah,
a hundred.
we really are going to offer what we have, because then the next lot of teachings comes from Geshe-la. So then there's the Vajrasattva practice, and now we have a whole new thing to do. So each year we have a new thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, by all means continue, but it won't be the main focus. Yeah. That said, I many people do their refuge nondros several times. They do them again and again. And when people have been very stuck on the count, they've said the first time they did it, they were just so obsessed with the count, they really didn't have a very good time. And so then they just went back and did it again, and that time had a much better experience because they were focused on the actual refuge experience. So I think we preempted that by being just a little bit more relaxed about the counting. And the main thing is the refuge. And so that's, I think, no, we should draw a line in the sand and offer what we have. What else? How else is everyone going?
I don't think I'm going to make it.
You're not going to,
I think counts.
the count.
Cool. I'm really enjoying the practice.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's okay. That's all right. You
Not.
see what, we've got a few retreat days coming up and things. So you don't necessarily have to do the long prayer, or you can mix it in with a shorter version of refuge, which I think maybe in retreat might be particularly effective because your mind is really, focused. So it's not like you're doing a shortcut. You're not kind of doing other things as well. So there's always wiggle room.
I'm finding it part of my practice now.
Yeah, it's
So
just become part of the
meditation and I was
usual morning practice. Yeah.
don't mean I start later into that. Because one round is still a quarter of an
Yeah.
hour. I do between one and I did four this morning. One and three usually.
Okay.
But again,
Yeah.
half an hour is sort of
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yes.
that brings up an interesting point because I prefer to do mine just before bed. There are a good
That's dangerous. Do you do 6 in the morning?
no, I just do the like, I won't miss the day.
I know, but that's really, that's like putting your tea right next to the
For me, it's like a wind down thing.
Yeah.
And it's like I don't do it just before bed. Like I start doing it at like 9:30, and then I finish, and then I think kind of wind
So
down.
yeah, there's nothing wrong with doing it at night and having it as a like a wind down thing like that, but also add in just 6 every morning.
Are you saying just in case? Just
Yes.
in case I skip?
Yeah.
I'm very disciplined,
What
so
if you
doing it.
get bopped on the head with a hammer and pass out and wake up the next day?
What if I wake up 3 days later? I'm like,
Yeah, that's right. No, Geshe-la did say try and do minimum 6 in the morning,
wow.
and then you can do them whenever you want.
It's easy. I
Yeah.
do it every day.
Yeah, let's do it while you're cleaning your teeth. It's okay. While you're in bed, whatever. But definitely do those. Yeah. Just slot that in. Really, don't live that dangerously. It's not just reliant on you, and that will be your big lesson, Stefan, that you may be. It's like being a motorcycle rider. You may be very, very diligent, but actually it's not up to you.
Follow that logic, I could do it in the morning, and then I could get bopped on the head by a hammer, wake up 3 days later. What's the
That's
difference?
right. That's right.
Oh, you didn't have to list that.
You've only missed 2 days.
Yes. Not that.
Some of the old stories about the old llamas and that, and they always say, because they've got commitments, they do some of them
Really quickly in the
in the
morning.
morning
Yeah, especially commitments.
because they get taken over with. Loving others, and when they don't get time to do their prayers, so they make sure they do the minimum that they have to, so that they're not thinking, I can't talk to you, I've got to go and do my
Yeah,
prayers. Be
that's right. Actually, that's a
meet
big
their commitments.
point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're getting pushed for time, then you don't go ditch all your friends because I've got to go do my refuge and forget about the sentient beings. Yeah, so if you've done the minimum, yeah.
Just of it to make
Like,
sure.
there's been food poisoning going around and things like that. That, yeah. So, can't
That's
see.
me.
Oh, Zara, yes.
Hello. So I'm Geshe-la, a student from India. And first of all, I wanted to thank Langri Thangpa Center for making it possible for all of us to receive Nundra instructions from Geshe-la. It's thanks to you that all of us are able to benefit. So thank you very much. That's the first thing I wanted to say. The second thing was, Miffy, I think you touched upon this very briefly. I just wanted to reconfirm that I got it right. It's okay to mix the different variants of the prayer as you go. So we can do six line, four line, and we can do
Yeah,
that. And it all counts.
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so Geshe-la, he kind of said in a way that we could settle on the one that we're the most comfortable with, and we could say, say we've done the four line refuge prayer, and we can say we've offered 100,000 of those, but he also said we can mix and match whatever is comfortable. Ian.
Can I just ask another question?
Oh,
When
no,
you,
we've got Ian, and then I'll come back to
oh,
you, Jessica.
sorry, yeah.
Yeah. So that's two sessions in a day is like a little mini retreat. So yeah. So I find when my day's off, I really love lazing around in bed, which is my meditation spot, and really doing spending time on the refuge. It's a really nice thing to do. Yeah. You're allowed to do anything, but I only do my practices for bed. I'm like, yeah, I think there's this terrible mention in the Lamrim Chenmo about like the really bad practitioners are the ones that meditate with their legs sticking out or in bed. And I'm like, oh. It's whatever to get it done. I think for a few years, I meditated on a cushion in front of an altar. I've done that every now and again. But yeah, exhaustion takes over, and so it's either not do it, fall off the wagon, which I've also done, or just get it done in a uncouth manner.
Oh, I didn't know if you were.
Of course.
I thought you already done it before.
No, I haven't done refuge and I thought, no way. No, and I almost fell off, you see, because there was that one day where I didn't do my formal nondro, but I did more than six refuges in all the other practices. Phew. Yeah, Francisca.
I was gonna
Yes,
say, sorry, just
can I?
based on like what you said before, I think Geshe Zopa himself has said that he first thing in the morning when he wakes up, he does his practices in bed while he's still like lying in bed, and so he doesn't forget. So,
Yeah.
if Geshe Zopa does it, then it's okay.
Yeah.
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 That's
And
okay.
also don't forget, like the traditional Tibetan being in bed, their beds are like a day bed. So they're sleeping, then they sit up and suddenly it's their office with their table in front. So yeah.
So what I wanted to ask is, when you say do six quick ones in the morning, you don't actually have to do the whole practice where you do refuge and four immeasurables and invocation and seven limb prayer. Do you have to do all the
If you
preparatory
can,
stuff?
do that, but Geshe-la said the very minimum is you do six refuge recitations and try and do them in the morning.
Yeah. See, I'm going to have surgery on the 4th of April, and I don't know how compos mentis I'm going to
Right.
be for a few days. So, can I ask Malcolm to do six on my behalf? He can be my
Yes.
proxy.
Yes, but get him to do them like with the phone next to your ear or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. That's okay. Thanks.
Ian says no, you have to start again.
Right.
And then Chris has just put it in order for Ian. Can he do hers too? Thanks. And so I'm really happy to hear that you're here and benefiting. So that just makes me very thrilled.
Thank you. Thank you
So
all.
yes, we're going to have a look at the conducive conditions, the place for doing a retreat, the attitude, and the mind-blowing yogic conducive conditions that Geshe-la talked about. And then we're going to have a look at just really briefly the Russian, what I call the Russian dolls of practice, which are the things within the things within the things. And so if you can't quite orient where you are in them, it can sound quite confusing. But they're just there for us to use if we're inspired to do so. And in amongst that, there's some really, I've tried to extract some of the quite unique and quite inspiring advice from Geshe-la and some of the, because the way he explains and teaches is really unique. It's not anything that you'll find in a book. Okay, so let's just do our little motivation and refuge and bodhicitta. So if you have a gold prayer book there in front of you, let's turn to what is usually the normal prayers for, oh yeah, page 34. So taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. And in English, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. The Four Immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And the Seven Limb Prayer in the English. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. So I forgot to ask the onliners, did you have anything, any comments or questions, how you're tracking in the practice, how it's going? Anything to add? I'm looking over here, even though camera's there. One's waving their hand. All good? You can. Right. Well, let's have the first handout, which is creating conducive conditions. And the main thing about this one, somebody asked, do you remember in the teaching, what do you do if like you're homeless or if you're living in a really difficult situation, there's a lot of violence around you and things, how can you do a retreat? What can you do? And Geshe-la actually said, well, there are no unconducive conditions, that everything can be a conducive condition for retreat, which I found quite heartening. That if we have, if we've got enough Dharma study and we've got a really good, strong motivation, then any kind of conditions we're in can become conducive conditions. So, of course, there are easier ones or less easy, but all of them with thought transformation we can take onto the practice. And he actually said, you know, that that the less material bondage that we have, the easier it is to practice. he talked at great length about the conditions of Geshe Lama Konchog, his late master, and the how he meditated in the caves up there with the wild animals, and actually was chased away by the villagers and things. They just thought he was some loony up in the hills there, and threw stones and things at him. So the other thing that Geshe-la said was that bodhicitta actually thrives in the worst conditions. Do you remember that? And that actually you need bad conditions to be able to generate bodhicitta. That, or colloquially, no mud, no lotus. So our bodhicitta can really grow strong in troubled circumstances, troubled zones, difficult environments. And why? Because they're unequivocally an opportunity to practice the six perfections, all of them, right there in the field, as it were. And then he also talked a little bit about modern day retreats, because there's been a few retreats in Singapore where they have it at like the Hyatt, I don't know, but it's the equivalent of the Hyatt, and there's a golf course and there's a spa, and it's just everything's laid on. And so then everybody goes and they just do this incredible retreat in these incredible conditions, and they have a whole conference hall laid out and beautiful. Yeah, it's really, and it's quiet and catered and room service, and yeah. No, and I'm like, yes. It does, and I think Geshe-la had quite a few digs at that, that we're trying to be renounced here, and that if you have to plug a retreat by selling all of the modern day comforts for it, it's really getting quite corrupted in a way. So yeah, it does. It contradicts the original intent, all these luxurious. So retreat means releasing from anything that you're averse to, anything that you're attached to, or anything that you cling to. So you release those so that you can actually focus on the object of your retreat. So that said, I mean, you know, Chenrezig Institute, you go up there, it's a holy place. There's all these holy objects. But, you know, it's the jungle and it's stinking hot and there's no air conditioning. It can be quite rough. But actually, it's a holy place, and that makes a big difference to your mind, being in a holy place like that. There was a time, I think, when His Holiness the Dalai Lama gave a retreat in the Blue Mountains, the Yamantaka. And so that was in a conference center and really nicely appointed and everything. But it's not necessarily a holy place. So the great teachers and lamas have to bring all the holiness with them. Okay, so then in general, when we're looking for a retreat place, try and have a secluded environment. And we create a sacred space by creating the altar, setting it all up nicely. It's up to us to create this sacred space physically, but also mentally and emotionally, by having a schedule and sticking to our schedule and having all the activities be Dharma activities, all the guidance from a qualified teacher. Yes, so secluded environment, physical preparation, sacred space, structured schedule, having the teacher's guidance, mental and emotional readiness. So having a really clear intention why we're doing the retreat, what the goal is, how do we know that we've actually accomplished that goal? How do we know if we've had the realizations? And a positive mindset. And then also he did mention the seventh point, which can be diet and fasting. So especially if it's a lower tantra retreat, to not eat any of the black foods, to try and be vegetarian. If you can, if you want to take the precepts. Don't have to take the precepts, maybe just on the precepts days. So that's in general. Then Geshe-la said about taking the same conducive conditions list as from the Lamrim Chenmo that comes just before the shamatha practice. So I put that there in the notes. It's volume 3, page 28. And so that was finding a peaceful place free of distraction. And Geshe-la said in particular, one that's peaceful in terms of that there's no violence there, that there's not, there hasn't been any disturbance like land clearance or mining, or desecration of sacred spaces, no butchery. I would, you know, in Australia, I'd try and make sure there hasn't been any massacre of Indigenous Australians, that kind of thing. And where the elemental forces and the spirit landlords of the place are happy and harmonious. So yeah, the ground not contaminated. So there are some places in Australia which have still this echo of trauma from various massacres and things, and they would not be the place to do a retreat unless you're willing to incorporate that into your retreat. So when I was on at the end of the holidays just recently, so I went to Melbourne for a gig, and it was this contemporary opera, and it was set in Abbotsford Convent, which up until very recently had been a place of torture for young girls, mental people, and unwed pregnancy and whatever. And the moment you set foot in that place, it's disturbed. But it was the perfect place for the gig, because the gig was about labyrinth and shame, and you went through the whole convent as and so it everything came together perfectly for that. That was the intention. But if you wanted to do a retreat, I would not hire rooms at the Abbotsford Convent, no way. And same thing. If you,
sorry, Miffy, I just wanted to ask, for chod practice, would you go to places like that on purpose?
So chod practice, I've heard you go to cemeteries, places where it's very in your face, death and impermanence, and also where there are a lot of spirits there that can.
But like Western cemeteries are very.
Are not like that. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very tame. So places like with the massacre and stuff, they would have a lot of spirits
they
and
would.
A lot of like, energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They would. But again, so chod practice is like one of those ones where you really have to listen to the advice of your lama, and they will tell you where to go.
Yeah.
Okay, where
yeah.
not to go.
Okay, fair enough.
And I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where you think, oh, cool, this is like a shortcut practice. But actually, it's a shortcut practice because all of the terror and trauma of like 40 years of practice is concertinaed into 4 days. So, hey, yeah, go for it. Excellent shortcut.
I've been reading about Buddha's journey, and he did that too. He would go, he would intentionally go to places that were disturbed.
Which was, yeah, that's right, just to, yes, to by himself to practice generosity, to meditate on selflessness of the I when it's being threatened, all of those things. So we really have to have a lot of backup of Dharma study before we do that. Yeah. Yeah, so... He was the Buddha, that's right. He was. I remember in Bendigo, there was on the Bendigo retreat, there was one lady who advertised herself as a chod practitioner, which in itself is also a contradiction in terms. But she would go and sit and meditate next to the dam there, where it was really quite muddy. And, you know, clearly there were whatever spirits and things there. And it didn't work out for us. So yeah.
So this church.
CHO umlaut D. Church. Just think, chop.
So back to, I guess, the conducive conditions, like for a retreat, there has to be conducive conditions. You can't just practice anywhere for a retreat.
No, well, wherever you practice is going to have an effect on you. So if you practice in a neutral place like a hotel, it's great, but it's not that powerful. So I've often thought, yeah, go to a hotel and put in earplugs and it's fantastic, but it doesn't have the strength. So you want to practice in a holy place that has the strength of many other practitioners having had meditated there and had realizations there.
Wow.
A farm stay, yeah, something like that. So if you do that, then you've got to bring your own holy place with you. So like the holy relics with you to make it a holy place. But it means we can't kind of hang on to the tail end of the practitioners who've been there before and hook into their energy.
Yeah, when I was up in Chinrezig, I would do the regular lama and all the prayers, and then I would do this when everyone had gone to the cabins, and I just really felt like I was in a, like there's like a tunnel, and I was like just gliding
You
through,
just
and I did like double my usual prayers every night, but because it just felt
yeah,
just being taken.
that's right. So Stefan saying at Chenrezig Institute doing his prayers after everyone had left the Gompa is like being in a tunnel, like just going whoosh.
Yep.
That's right, because with a very very minimal energy, suddenly everything goes. That's right. So that's the blessing of place. We also have that from the blessing of our guru. That as well. But in terms of conducive conditions to make it easy for us, it really does count. And there are places like in Nimbin, Nimbin has had a lot of massacres and things. So you don't want to go to a place that's got disturbances unless you're aware that that's what's going to happen. At the same time, going on pilgrimage is another way to. Geshe-la often says to consecrate your chakras, to consecrate your body, speech, and mind by physically being in the presence in a holy place. There's this real power to it. Just by touching your feet there, you are blessed. So then, but then he said, well, if you can't create a holy place like this, then you create one yourself with the six preparatory practices. You can create that. So, in terms of our conducive conditions, there's the peaceful place, then there's having less activities and responsibilities, having less desire, and cultivating a mind of contentment, being content with whatever you have. So, less responsibilities where you're not thinking about all your worldly stuff and getting busy, that you can let the busyness go. Less desire, that you can release all of the samsaric preoccupations. And often, when you do go into retreat and your world is concertinaed like that, then, but the desirous mind is still there, then you'll just get like totally obsessed. I've got to have the best cushion, or I've got to get that piece of cake or whatever, or I've got to make sure I get to the shower first so I get the hot water. Or, so the river of desire is still running. The objects are less, and so then they just get even more intense. So try and like lessen that, and then concentrate on being content with whatever's there. If the food's crap, it's okay. If the bed, like one time we had Nyungnaes here and we had all the blow up mattresses, and so poor lady's mattress just went down every night straight away, and she was like, yeah, that's just the mattress I got. So to develop this contented mind. Then keeping ethical discipline and completely getting rid of thoughts of desire and so forth by meditating on all of the lam rim reasoning. So that's like a deeper level. There's a really big description about all of this in I've put here transcript 2 from page 13 onwards if you want to get all of Geshe-la's wonderful stories. So in here for the conducive conditions from Geshe-la's talk, then I've put together this simple retreat checklist. So it's just questions that cover all of the points for us modern day people in a city and with jobs and whatever, just to just make sure that we've got as much as possible organized. So if you've done Yungnes here before, some of that's quite familiar, similar thing there too. And so Liam, you're about to come and do a retreat in our little retreat room here on site. So there's your little checklist. Just go through that. I know you're not that keen on checklists, but they are following you around.
No, so just giving you a guarantee.
Geshe-la talked about over the page the yogic conducive conditions. So this, the thing that struck me about this was that, I mean, it's so out there, and it's really, it's almost like a fantasy movie, that you'd turn around and there's Merlin or something. But how Geshe-la shared this with us, I just felt like it was such a vote of confidence that he would share all of this, because we too have a potential to get to this level. It's like he wasn't ruling it out. So he shared it to inspire us, but also just because he has such equanimity about us all, that here it is, it's possible. So he didn't mention all of these, but this is kind of the general list that I found online, the yogic powers or siddhis that we hear about: clairvoyance, being able to perceive things at a distance or that are hidden, clairaudience, hearing conversations.
Parents have that, don't
Parents have that. Also, sometimes, usually in a negative way, you can tell when someone's, sometimes if you have a really strong connection, you can tell they're talking about you. Telepathy, the ability to read others' thoughts, recollection of past lives. In the list, it was called supernatural locomotion. Sounds like a song, but actually, quick feet is the power. That's what Geshe-la called it. Quick feet. And so this is what Geshe Lama Khonshog had, the ability to be able to travel where there isn't a direct route. So he was saying, if you're in the cave and you know that the locals are going to start coming up and disturbing you, and so you want to move caves and you don't want to go down back into the village and come back up again, but you can't directly go, then quick feet means you can just directly go. But I also think Geshe Zopa has quick feet, because I've seen him just like glide at about 40 miles an hour through the streets of Kathmandu, through all the traffic, just like smooth, not walking, like boing, 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 like people do. Just, yeah, it was really quite something. Control over the elements, which includes the Chulin practice of taking the sustenance from the air and from the elements. Which Geshe Lama Khonshog was able to do, and Milarepa did, of course, but also control over the elements of being able to control floods and earthquakes and the rain, which is also what Geshe Lama Khonshog did. And I witnessed up at Chenrezig Institute, where there was this incredible drought, and so everyone's like, "Please, Geshe-la, can you help? Can you bring the rain?" And so then he said, When would you like it?" And so they're like, "Oh, I don't know, like Wednesday." And he is like, "Okay." And so then he did whatever various pujas, and then rain came on Wednesday, and yeah, it bucketed down. And also, Khitra Rinpoche, who was at the Tibetan Buddhist Society in Brisbane for all those years. So someone had to do their fire poop at the end of the retreat, and there was Queensland thunderstorms just everywhere. And so we got there, and everyone's like, "Be really, really quiet," because Khitra Rinpoche is saying these mantras to hold off the rain. And so there was clouds all the way around, and right above the center was just like blue sky. And it was Macon's fire puja. And so she was able to do a fire puja. But then one of the students was this really big, really loud guy, like super extrovert. And so he arrived, he's like, "Hi, everybody, whatever." And then Keita Rinpoche just kind of started laughing, really sheepishly said, "I'm sorry, I've lost my concentration." So control over the elements. Yeah, see this, that's right. And Westerners would think at the beginning, oh, yeah, right, hocus pocus.
Yeah, and he just, it was a clear sky and he did some mantras or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's fine. And then he just, then it came and he went, okay, that's enough. Like, and they were like, oh, okay. They had a bit more respect.
And it's kind of like the Day of Miracles, where the really hard-headed people, like, they needed 1,000 miracles before they were convinced. And so we need to have some demonstrations of power. So these yogic conducive conditions, the illusory body, the ability to duplicate your body of light, and then the tummo, the inner heat. So there's a whole practice of that in the Western world now with what's his Hof? Wim Hof? Yeah. Tummo inner heat practice. But what else I found online too was that the context to take these yogic conducive conditions in. So one is that they are a sign of progress, but they're more like a side effect. They're not the main thing. The whole purpose is that they're powers that can help us continue the retreat and help sentient beings really effectively. And to be careful, because there's potential distractions which can happen, which you can get sidetracked into all of these razzmatazz powers and lose the whole point that they are side effects of bodhicitta, of meditation. So Geshe-la talked about the chulen, the quick feet, tummo, and then he also mentioned about the ability to disappear. So even though you're there, animals don't see you. So that's handy if you're in the bush and a snake comes along, the snake will just continue along. It's not going to freak out. But also more importantly, humans don't see you, so they don't disturb you or get freaked out. So it's a very wide-ranging kind of view there of what the conducive conditions are. And so within that, how to create our sacred space. Next one, Liam, would you like to hand this out? Is the six preparatory practices. So the six preparatory practices, at the top here, it says it comes from transcript 2 from page 15 onwards. How they're listed changes slightly in the various Lamrim books, but cleaning the place and setting up the altar is one of them. And so that's kind of the physical before you even start the retreat. So when we're going to have our retreat evening and our Easter retreat, we can have a go at these six preparatory practices. What are you laughing at?
I remember finding your posture. I remember the cow story.
Cow story.
That was so good.
Yes, so we'll get to that. Yes. I mean, it's so skillful the way Geshe Zopa teaches in stories, just like Lama Zopa Rinpoche. Setting up the offerings, sitting comfortably, visualizing field of merit, seven-limb prayer and mandala, and requesting the gurus for inspiration. So what I've included here is just the bits from Geshe Zopa that he added in. So it's not an exhaustive list and it's not necessarily all the main points or whatever, but it's just extracting the main things that Geshe-la said about each of these. So for the cleaning, he had that whole practice of dulma pa, tima pa, dust out, dirt out. And if anyone here is into linguistics, if you type into AI, what does dulma pa, tima pa mean? It'll come up with this incredible rave about the object and the subject, and it's just like this philosophical, semantic, amazing background that adds this whole other layer to dust out, dirt out. It's really quite profound. So the practice of cleaning helps clean our mind, Having a clean place means that we attract all of the darkas and dakinis and the devas. And if we have a messy place, it attracts obstacles. So regardless of the state of your house at the moment, when you do a retreat, try and have that bit really nice. He said everything's celestial, as if you're inviting the Buddha to tea. And that even if it's clean, cleaning is part of the training, it's part of the retreat. And it's like a bio life hack, isn't it? By physically cleaning, you're activating this whole process that then will echo in your mind, and by physically doing it makes it much more focused and easier to get started. So it's a meditation. Then the next one, setting up the altar. So whether you have many holy objects or just one Buddha statue or picture, it's enough. And even if you have nothing, it's enough. It's really very encouraging, Geshe-la's attitude. And so what he said, it's about actualizing the merit field or the refuge field altar within your own heart. So by putting the altar out there, then when you look at it, it's like a mirror, and what you're trying to do is have that altar in your heart. Then there was a long teaching about all the different ways to arrange the altar in a hierarchy, circular. Does anyone remember that story? The Geshe was saying, the lady that had the little statue, and it just gets slowly, slowly, slowly more towards the periphery. She got more and more expensive ones, and he's just like begging her, please, please, please put it back in the. So there's some kind of rules of thumb there about how to do the various hierarchy and how to arrange them. Then also arranging the offerings. So the thing that I've put in here into the handout, which is really, I think it's really precious and unique, what Geshe-la said, that try to see all of the offerings as arising from the Dharmakaya. They arise from the wisdom of emptiness. They're not just material objects. And they're not, their value isn't just based on the material value. Then, if you don't have physical offerings, you can offer from your heart through visualization. And visualization is expressed on the basis of the wisdom of emptiness. So, from the wisdom of emptiness, you visualize offering water. So, what you're offering then is definitive water. It's not just literal water, it's water arising from the wisdom of emptiness. So, it's a really quite a different type of offering. When you're offering flowers, it's not just ordinary flowers, it's definitive flowers. It's flowers arising from your wisdom realizing emptiness. The flower comes out from wisdom, so they're celestial flowers. So this is like bringing in the whole tantric aspect without mentioning the tantric aspect. Really changing our ordinary view, and it really is the essence of making these offerings. In the wisdom of emptiness, there are no limitations. You can visualize infinite offerings as pure as you wish. If your visualization is actualized from the wisdom of emptiness, then you create the actual amount of merit as if you were actually offering. And this practice helps expand and purify your ordinary, narrow, and impure mind, making it open and expansive. So I think this is really a nice way to approach making offerings, because we can get quite stressed about not having enough staff, and do I have everything, and is it set up nicely, and all of that. Really just to remember, there's the basis of the offering, and then what you're visualizing arising from wisdom of emptiness.
Was one of those movies, and I thought, well, I'll try and remember that. If I can remember that image from.
Well, what I remember is Elizabeth Taylor's jewels,
Oh, yeah.
and I them.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
Remember.
Queen's jewels, or when they had that
Yeah.
that exhibition of the treasures from the Vatican. I mean, diamonds galore, just offer all of those. So yeah, anything you've seen on telly, all the fantasy movies are really helpful for that. Then offer all of those. Yep. And remember, in the nature of, by nature empty. Yep. And yeah, then there's a little bit about finding your personal posture. And as Stefan was remembering, the guy whose posture was should as a cow. And so, if we don't have the right posture, then what happens is there's really subtle blockages, and then realizations don't necessarily come when they could. So I'm thinking for us beginners that the thing to do is to try and have a correct posture to start with, and then when you need to move, then move. And then you'll find what's the most conducive for you. But pretty much a straight back is part of the formula. But there are, I mean, we don't have the picture here, but when Eddie's dead wife, Tash, when she was still alive, and Geshe Tashi Tseren gave a practice for them to do, and it was the Chenrezig that's sitting there, really like chilled out with the arm hike. And it's like it's the chilled out Chenrezig practice to do, and that was the one for Eddie and Tash. Cleansing your system with the 9-round breathing, and so there's a link there on the bottom of page 4 of this handout to the various YouTube demonstrations, the one by His Holiness, but also by very young Geshe Zopa and B. Alan Wallace. I've just included a very, very brief part of the description in here because, of course, it doesn't make any sense. But I've included some of the bits here so that you can get what's happening when you watch the video. And in the bold here on page 4, Geshe-la's instructions really going in detail about how to purify attachment, anger, and ignorance. So it's all in there if you want to pursue it. So the 9-round breathing with the actual physical yoga associated with it could be quite powerful. Then the end part of the 6 preparatory practices, the visualization, the meditation, the inviting the merit field, all of this is pretty much covered then in the refuge practice, and then dedicating with bodhicitta and emptiness. And so the formula for that was dedicate, make sure we dedicate with bodhicitta, dedicate in emptiness, and dedicate to actualize the 2 stages of the tantric path. Then dedicating for our guru's long life and for world peace. And so then within these the preparatory practices is the 7-limb prayer. And so that's the third handout, which we're all very familiar with, the 7-limb practice. And here we are, Chris. No, Stefan. Stefan's go. Here we are. No, not that one. Which is 7 limbs. This one. Here we are. So this is also extracted from Geshe-la's teachings, and that's when I noticed that he talked a lot about all of them except for the third one, confession. Just missed it, and all of us missed it. But I think we'll be able to catch up because when Geshe-la comes in July, it's going to be about Vajrasattva practice and purification, and confession will necessarily come into that with the 4 appointed powers. So it'll be okay. That's why, possibly that's why I did it like that. I wouldn't be surprised. So lots of lists of this and that, but and then within that also were within the 7 limbs are the offerings. So you've got both the physical offerings that you put out there, but then you've got when you offer them, which is in your mind, and that's a whole nother practice. Same as you set up the altar and you have the kind of the hierarchy and everything, but then in your mind, when you visualize the merit field, that's a whole nother thing. And he said they can mirror each other, but don't have to, because you might have the bird's eye view. You might have each one step by step, if we've got the time to do that, or we might just have the many into one. So again, he said it's up to us. What's most comfortable. So at the moment, I'm aspiring to do all the one by one, but it's very haphazard. There's no way. I've just got general clouds of the refuge field, like we have general clouds of the chandeliers. Is in the little booklet, the preliminary practice of going for refuge, that I've also put into a PDF. And there's also this. So this has got everybody listed. And online, there is also a link to the picture, and that's where there's actually a real coloured picture that I showed you last time that has everybody.
Thank you.
So I've got two copies of this, but it's also online, and that's the booklet. So did anyone else want a copy of that? It's the same as the little booklet from last time. You got one?
Not sure.
So everybody's in there. I've just added where it said the eight great bodhisattvas. I really wondered who they were, so I've added their names in, but otherwise it's identical. So the eight great bodhisattvas are actually, it was great finding out about them. There, if you've ever been to Singapore to the Buddha Tooth Relic Temple, it's about 5 stories tall, it's fairly new. And so they have a Buddha tooth relic, which is inside this golden stupa with all this golden ground. And the temple is just really spectacular. They've got a holy relics museum in there. And all of these, like Madame Tussaud's waxworks of all the various different gurus. So they're really immediate, life size right there in this gallery. You kind of, hello, hello, as you're walking along. And, they at the top where they have the Buddha tooth relic, their whole shrine room is surrounded by the eight great bodhisattvas. They're right there. Yes. When Shakyamuni Buddha attained enlightenment, Manjushri, Avalokiteshvara, and Vajrapani, so the wisdom, compassion, and power, Maitreya, representing love and karmic activity because being a future Buddha, Siddhartha, Buddha's merits, someone who I've never heard of, Sava Nivana Vishkambin, purifying wrongdoing and obstructions, Akasagaba, the Buddha's blessings and the ability to purify transgressions, and Samantabhadra, pure conduct and expertise in making offerings. So yeah. So no more meditations and such from these handouts, but enough to start then finessing our own personal shrine rooms and getting ready to figure out how you'd like to set up when we do our retreat days, if you're going to join us from home. Questions, comments?
I suppose if you're laying down in bed, Miffy, your back is straight, isn't it?
Yes, if you're laying down in bed and your back is straight, that's fine. So the only danger is if you fall asleep. But if you don't fall asleep, no worries. It's great to meditate lying down, no problem at all. And people do. It's just that because we've got lying down and sleep associated, it can be a bit of a battle. And also, if you're exhausted and you go to meditate and you fall asleep, as Corey Jackson has often said, that's a problem with sleep, not a problem with meditation. It's probably that you just haven't had enough sleep. And so for things like that, it's probably better to actually have a nap and then get up and splash water on your face and meditate rather than try and struggle on through. It's actually better to have a little reboot. Any other questions from our lovely onliners? Oh, yes. If you have insomnia, brilliant. So instead of lying awake at night, what do we normally do? Worry.
Go do your mantra.
Just use that worry to power those mantras. Yep. Because we can guarantee while we're lying in bed, in our nice comfy bed at night, there's all this catastrophe happening in the world. So we can give that our attention in this enlightened manner. Yep. Yeah, and one of the worst things for insomnia is trying to force yourself to sleep and feeling bad that you're missing out on sleep. So if you just cut your losses and go, well, okay, I'm going to make it really beneficial, then you're going to relax. And then when you're ready, sleep will come.
Sometimes I do.
Not being a bad influence on your sleep. Like, I'm just meditate a little bit.
Help me make sure he can sleep, bedroom for sleep. So, that if you have insomnia, you're meant to sort of have that trigger not to move.
I know people always say that you have the bedrooms for all the bedroom things and sleep and whatever, and then you have, but that means you have to have a whole house that has a study and a meditation room and all these things. So I've never had that. And I've always had my bedroom in the lounge or the kitchen because I want to be in the middle of everything. I don't miss out on anything and I just want to listen to everybody have their conversations. And so, like, oh, so, and then plus my bed is the office.
Yes.
Oh, so, you know,
Yeah.
no, Eddie, you can't come to bed yet. I'm still at work at the office.
Yeah.
And he's like, just moving a few of the papers, like, no. Because it's great. It's like having a presidential desk to spring everything over, except much more comfortable because you can put your feet up on it. So I haven't gone by that whole thing of this is my way of tricking myself to do work is just to be comfortable.
Okay.
They do meditate sitting up in their bed, yeah, in their sleeping bags or whatever. That's right. And so it was like a tiny house. Office, kitchen, shrine room, everything together. And there's a lot to be said for that. Yeah. So the main thing is the association. So actually, the worst association really is reading yourself to sleep at night. That's what we all well grew up doing, isn't it? But it's terrible, terrible association to associate sleep and reading. Like, no, we don't want to do that. But if we do, then at least go to sleep with your mind in the pure light so that you have a light sleep rather than a pass out coma sleep. Oh, yes. So, Steve and Anne, just like living in our bus, all the rooms in one. Yeah, that's right. So you've almost got like a monastery cell on wheels. Any other questions or comments?
Doing the these practices can bring out emotions. Like there was a Christmas, I guess, I started to feel not worthy, and then I had to start to focus on that, because we are worthy. It is the perfect human rebirth. But stuff, some emotional stuff came up. So maybe it's just Christmas, but
It's probably both, but I think emotional stuff coming up when you're doing this is a good sign because we're working through karmic detritus, and it's a sign that it's touching us. And I think that we've been able to do this over an extended time, so quite leisurely, has meant that it's given all of those unconscious things a time to come up, and we can deal with them in a whole different way through the lens of refuge rather than the normal way. So I think it's a really good sign that things are shifting. And personally, to just kind of, it's like the in-between realm, isn't it? To let it do that. So
freak out. I just thought,
no, it just let it do its thing.
what shit.
Yeah, because
Go.
it can, your energy levels can go up and down. I mean, the thing doing with the meditation on the Sangha, and so then it says, and they're really pleased with you,
Yeah.
and that just blew my mind. I found that really emotional to have someone really pleased with me like that, and I found it incredibly moving. So anything like that, I've just kind of like riffed on a theme and just gone into it, and it all kind of actually was quite serendipitous because also, over the holidays, I've lost a couple of friends. So I've gone through this whole trauma of losing really long-term friends and then putting the chandeliers up and having this physical space that's like a space for all the holy beings to reside in, and then doing the Sangha refuge. And then it's like, ah, of course I've lost these worldly friends, because worldly friends are not enlightened and they're worldly and we're at the beck and call of karma and conditions and whatever. Who are my real friends? Are the Sangha. And here they are. And they're pleased with me. And it's like, oh yeah. So it's this whole thing to
you.
Yes. Yeah, because this practice isn't separate from your life. So many people go through an emotional thing at Christmas just because it's a catalyst. And that's not separate from the refuge. That's all part of this story. It's really for all of us, it's a living tradition. And what we go through is a living tradition like that. Yep.
I've shared some of my experiences meditating with Venerable Tende, and he said, you know, when you're going deeper, such as with these kind of practices, as you're going deeper, you're kicking up some of the stuff on the surface, get kicked up.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff at the bottom, or, you know, gets kind of kicked up.
Yeah.
And it's important that it does.
Yeah. That's right. So, yes, so Venerable Pende is saying, as you do these practices, if you're actually spending the time, then, yeah, the stuff on the bottom gets kicked up and it comes up as muck and dirt to the surface. And I also remember, you know, those two Westerners that did the three-year retreat at Shinne Land, and so they were saying they barely got started with the 3 years, that the gunk that came up and that kept on coming up to purify. And so that, yeah, not to be shocked about it, it's actually a good sign that it's happening, and we have this refuge practice to deal with it in real time.
Especially the last was purification.
The purification meditations. Yes, so that's right. We've gone through the various causes and we've adjusted our motivation, and then we get to this, and that's the purification ones. And so, yes, that's right. Purification can be quite dramatic. Emotionally, it can be quite dramatic. And so, yeah, to just see it continuously through this lens of refuge, and that it's a, you know, it's a real-time thing. It's a real-time practice with the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Yeah, that's right. So that feeling of trapped and feeling down, then, so Lama Yeshe would say that's like you're using that feeling to open your heart, to become compassionate, to develop bodhicitta, and then it's sincere. Then you're not going to feel like a fraud. It's, you know, based in. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's right. So the four wheels of Dharma turning beneath Stephen. And so who can remember those four Mahayana wheels that are mentioned in the Guru Puja? Okay. Shall we do our little meditation? I think we've got time, and then then I've got about just a minute or two for concluding things. So let's, if you have your prayer books in front of you, so I'm not sure. Yeah, we might do some of those prayers. Let's just adjust our posture, physical posture, making sure our spine is straight and our body relaxed. And then adjusting our mental attitude, a mind of altruism, and a mind of going for refuge with this Mahayana flavor, not just our personal refuge, but going for refuge so that we can become a refuge for others. So in the space in front of you, imagine that there manifests out of the Dharmakaya a vast jeweled throne. It's at the level of your brow. So this level is just like a middle way, so that you don't get distracted or you don't have a sinking mind. So at the level of the brow. And on this really huge jeweled throne of five smaller thrones. And on the central one is Lord Buddha, in essence, your root guru, with a body made of light, golden, and with Buddha Vajradhara in his heart. And on the throne in front of you is your root guru. So Buddha manifesting as your root guru. Young, vibrant. And so Geshe's Opa said, in this case, your root guru is the one that you have the most connection to, the closest connection to, the one you're most involved with at the moment. And so in this case, with this refuge practice, it'd be Geshe's Opa. And then surrounding are all the gurus that you have taken teachings from in this life, including the teacher who taught you to read and write. So all the gurus, worldly and spiritual, those living on cushions and those who've passed away on lotuses. So all the direct gurus are looking at you, and all the rest of this vast merit field are looking at Lord Buddha. So on the throne to the left of the Buddha, Manjushri Buddha and the lineage. On the throne to the right, Maitreya Buddha and the lineage. And behind, Vajradhara Buddha and the lineage. So all of them facing Lord Buddha. And surrounding them, all the Nirmanakaya aspect Buddhas, the 1,000 Buddhas of this eon, the 35 Buddhas, the 8 medicine Buddhas. The Dharma, both the understanding and realizations, manifesting as texts in front of them all. And surrounding these figures are the Sangha refuge, the eight great bodhisattvas, the solitary realizers with crown pinnacles like the Buddha, the hearers with robes and begging bowls, around them, the Dakas and Dakinis, representing compassionate activity and wisdom activity in the dancing posture. And surrounding them, all the Dharma protectors, protecting from small, medium, and great scope hindrances. So just like the chandeliers hanging above us, all these beings are right there above our heads. We are amongst it. And below are all the guardians of the four directions, the elementals, the custodians of the land, all the worldly beings. Your guru and the Buddha looking directly at you, accepting you and caring for you. And everyone else looking at the Buddha like in a sports stadium, made of light, discussing the Dharma, very much alive with the work for sentient beings. All these figures are extremely pleased with you in turning your mind to the Lam Rim. And light and nectar streams from them all, purifying transgressions and unskillful actions and attitudes. So, whatever refuge verse that you've been reciting, it can be the very simple one. I take refuge in the Guru, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. Or in the Tibetan, Lama La Kyapsu Chiwo, Sangya La Kyapsu Chiwo, Trela Kyapsu Chiwo, Kendun La Kyapsu Chiwo. I take refuge in the Guru, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. And continuous, oh, sorry. The continuous light and nectar flow from this great refuge field, illuminating your mind, cleansing your body, energizing your system. And feel that your life force and merits are increasing. All your energy replenished, your merits refueled, your life force restored. Feel completely under the protection of the three jewels of refuge. And especially feel under the protection of the vast array of Sangha, our closest friends. I take refuge in the Guru, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru, the Buddha, the Dharma. I take refuge in the Guru, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And so then for the absorption, very gently the lineage grooves absorb one by one into the main figure. And absorb into your guru all the bodhisattvas and the Buddhas dissolve into your guru's heart. And your guru absorbs into the heart of the Buddha, but without dissolving into light, keeping his light body form. Shakyamuni Buddha comes gently to the crown of your head, turning to face the same direction as you, and dissolves into light, into your crown, coming to rest at your heart. And meditate on the emptiness of the eye. And then from this transcendental wisdom bliss, meditating on emptiness, realizing emptiness, and through the power of your bodhicitta, you spontaneously arise into a form to continue helping sentient beings. And then we can recite a short dedication prayer. So that can be on the page 36 of the prayer book. You are dear in your door, darling. Lama Sangye Drogyo Nyingma Chigyan Mawalupam Deyasam Gopam Shumur Chantro Semchorin Ma kye pa na kye gyue chi kye nyam pa me con en ri con du ba wo du shou wo. And the long life prayer for His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Kam rir ra we ko we shing kam dir pen dra en dir wa ho shwe ne chen re zi guan man ten zin gya so yi. And also dedicating for the very swift return of our precious guru Kyabjeso Rinpoche, in whatever form, may he swiftly return to continue his great work of teaching us sentient beings, and dedicating for all of your own Dharma success without any obstacles, and that in turn, we can contribute to the ultimate success and happiness of all the sentient beings. Just as a concluding couple of things, hopefully you're oriented with what I'm calling the Russian dolls of the practice, which is a little bit like, have any of you seen that movie Inception? You know how they go and then boom into the next level and then boom into the next. So it's kind of like that. You've got the conducive conditions, the six preparatory practice, the seven limb prayer, the eight offerings, and then you go back up again. So they do all fit together quite nicely. We've got the next couple of times that we get together. I think we've got one Friday. No, we've got the next thing that's coming up is a 1 day retreat on the 1st of March. So that's, I'm not sure if it's 9 or 10 o'clock start. I'll have to have a look. But anyway, 1st of March.
Nine.
Nine. Oh,
Come on, Ruby.
Why don't you get yourself
wait a second.
have some coffee? Coincidence.
Let me check that. And
Yeah,
oh, it is. It's 9 till 4. That's right. So that's because I really wanted to be able to cover all of the various meditations that we've done over the time. And then to be able to do that, then also we've got I think it's 9 till 12 over Easter. And so then there might be one other retreat day, and then Geshe-la is here for the next installment. So we'll be able to really make an inroad here. So please, you have a look now at that Rinpoche's The Preliminary Practice of Going for Refuge, that booklet, because it's got all this incredible description of the visualization, and it's so immediate. You really feel there. Everybody's there, all the descriptions. Just like I said, I think a few of the other times, if you want to invite the Buddha holy relics home and take some home with you, then please come and speak to me about that. If you're online, then you please email me about that. Were there any last questions before we finish? Anything at all?
Is the retreat only open online?
Yes, it's only online. So normally that's just started during COVID times. We do I usually get together a nice screen share and we have a online thing each morning, and then the rest of the day is like, dang. So holiday for the mind and then holiday for the
Okay.
rest of the day. Yeah.
I have a question, Mithi.
Yes, Rachel.
I've been getting a lot of loom. So I found doing all these meditations is a little bit too much for me. So I've just been like just visualizing my gurus, just hanging out with them, and then visualizing as the Buddha, and then just trying to take refuge. That's okay, right? That's enough.
Can you do the meditation whilst walking?
I probably can.
Or say your
Maybe.
mantras whilst walking?
Okay. Yeah. All right. I might give that a go. Yeah. Do you think that'll help? Like the walking, the movement?
Walking the movement, because it's movement and it's grounded.
Oh, so.
So what kind of lung, Rachel? Like, what do you mean by lung?
Yeah, tightness in the chest. Sometimes it gets really tight, goes up to my jaw. Yeah.
So for that, that's like do prostrations first and then sit down relaxed and just do simple meditations. So you've got to have physical activity for that.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, frustration and walking. Yeah.
Prostrations and walking, because
Yeah.
other kinds of lung, like when you get really shocked easily, that's a different kind of thing. But this one, the tightness, it means that there's too much energy is wound up.
Yeah.
And so it's like a too wound up spring.
Yeah.
So just sitting with a too wound up spring isn't going to unwind it. So you've got to release that energy somehow. So prostrations are really good because they physically get the energy flowing. And also walking is good because you're in a flow. Whereas when we're tight, our minds go faster, faster, faster. But if we did that whilst we're walking, we'd be very soon aware of that. We'd be doing that like in the cartoons, you know. So you get your pace back. So
Okay.
give that a go.
Yeah. Is it a type of lung when you're really like shaky and agitated? Is it another type of lung?
There's all different ones. There's ones where you hear a loud noise and you die. Where your nervous system is so, that's Venerable Pende. He had that lung. Lama Zopa Rinpoche said when, like, because he's had it for years and years, when he first went up to Hinrezig Institute, he was so ill. And he said everyone had to be quiet. That's why all the door frames have felt on them, because he said a loud noise could kill him. And I didn't understand that until, you know, I had my nervous breakdown and all of my nervous system was so sensitized that every time there was a bang, I had this shot of adrenaline that would just wipe me out for like a day. And I thought, I get it now. I get how you could die. So yeah, there's all different types of lung, but the beginning one of just that tightness in the chest is from focusing too hard intellectually without letting it flow into your experience. The thing isn't to tackle it head on, but to get that flow in your experience first and then have it follow with your practice. Warm-heartedness and all of that. But the way to get it is prostrations and walks.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So good. Okie dokie.